Welcome back, dear listeners. It's good to have you with us once again here on Iran Radio. As we move forward with today's programming, we invite you to stay with us for a series of thoughtful and enriching segments we've prepared for you. Here's that still to come on your station. To begin, we present Spring of Truth, a program that offers a reflective connection to the roots of the Islamic Revolution. This program features English translation of selected statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, delivered on various occasions. After that, we bring you Iran Today. If you're looking to stay informed about the current developments within the Islamic Republic, whether in science, technology, the economy, or key national initiatives, this program provides a concise and informative overview of what's happening across the country. Following that, we turn to Minbar, a program that shares insightful excerpts from the sermons and talks of prominent Islamic scholars, covering themes such as ethics, theology, Quranic exegesis, Islamic history, and occasionally contemporary social and political matters. Minbar offers listeners a rich space of contemplation and learning. Then we'll join the panel in Quran Quest, a roundtable discussion addressing your questions about the Holy Quran. With clarity and care, our panelists respond to inquiries received via phone and online platforms, offering guidance and resolving uncertainties about the meanings and messages of the sacred book. Up next, Spring of Truth. We invite you to stay with us. Allah,
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of Truth.
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome back to the Spring of the Truth. And I'm over here, Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, your host. And we are going to discuss a beautiful quote today from Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullahi Alayhi. The Imam says, "The country is now yours. When the country is yours, you must serve it just as if you are serving your own family." This is a beautiful quote which has a lot of rays in the religion of Islam as well. The Imam says, "The country is now yours." It means it is your country. Think your country is your family. When you think about your family, you know that you have to provide it, you have to give all the basic necessities, you have to be good, you have to be kind. So there are many rules and regulations which Islam speaks out in regards to family and the family members. Likewise, if we consider our country to be our family example, then we are going to reach out. We are going to see where are the country's needs at the moment. Example, if the country is suffering from drought, I am going to save water. I'm not going to waste water. You are going to keep your country neat and clean. You don't litter and you don't vandalize your own home. You clean, you maintain and you protect it. Likewise, I'm going to protect my country. We have to maintain our country in the best manner possible if we consider that our country is our home. So over here when we say it is our home, it means that it is a shared home where we are all responsible for. So over here, we can say that the nation is a trust in our hands. Serve it with the same love and responsibility you reserve for your family. This is a very important thing, brothers and sisters. If we don't consider our nation to be a trust in our hands, then we are going to misuse it. In the religion of Islam, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has pointed towards something which is very important, and that is haqqun nas, the rights of the people. And the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have pointed and given a lot of weight towards Baytul Mal, that is the treasury of the country, of the nation. Example, the money shouldn't be used in a wrong means. You must have heard about the story of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam, where his brother comes to meet him and the Imam was the caliph of the time and he was writing something. It was dark night, so Aqil, his brother, comes to meet him. And when the Imam asks his brother, "Why have you come for? Is it a government duty or is it a personal thing?" Then his brother says, "Ya Mawlaya, I have a personal issue." Then the Imam does something which is eye-catching. He turns off the candle which was burning over there and he lights another one. His brother asks him, "What are you doing?" To which the Imam replies, "The candle which was lit was from Baytul Mal, the treasury, the money of the people, and I don't want to waste it for my personal issue." Are we serving our nation in this manner? Another hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, that people are brother to each other. If they are not equal in faith, they are equal in being humans. So over here, the Imam points that we are all equal in one aspect, that is in the humanistic form. So we have to respect our values towards each other. We have to care them. We can't just consider the fact that we are living in this world all by ourselves and everything is at our disposal.
Assalamu alaikum wa
La ilaha illallah.
was Spring of Truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On November 20th, inside a packed IAEA Board of Governors meeting room in Vienna, a familiar drama played out once again. With 19 votes in favor, the European Troika, joined by Washington, pushed through yet another resolution demanding that Iran fully and immediately expand cooperation with nuclear inspectors. The text calls on Tehran to hand over precise data about its 60% enriched uranium stockpiles and to open the gates of its nuclear facilities to agency personnel, among many other demands. But Tehran saw this coming. Iranian diplomats had warned that any new hostile measures would reflect Western political ambitions, not nuclear facts. And they point to what they call the real trigger for today's crisis: the June attacks on Iran's safeguarded nuclear facilities carried out by the United States and the Israeli regime. Once again, Iran's peaceful nuclear program has become a convenient stage for political theater, pressure that has never succeeded in stopping Iran from pursuing its legitimate nuclear rights. It's a game that seems to never end. That's how Iran frames the IAEA's approach, a process designed to keep Tehran in a permanent limbo until it yields to Western demands. Russia, China, and Niger voted against the resolution. 12 other countries abstained. The split vote underscored a truth everyone in the room already knew. The board is deeply polarized and nowhere close to consensus. In a joint statement, 8 countries, that is Belarus, China, Cuba, Iran, Nicaragua, Russia, Venezuela, and Zimbabwe, condemned the U.S. and Israeli attacks on Iranian nuclear facilities and denounced the push for a new resolution. They urge member states to resist politicizing Iran's nuclear file and reject the draft entirely. While the resolution ultimately passed, the combined 12 abstentions and 3 no votes revealed what Iran called a gap between reality and truth inside the agency. Dr. Afifeh Obedi, a prominent journalist and foreign policy researcher, provided us with her analysis of the vote's composition.
در ادامه این روند به نظر میرسه که قطعنامه هم که از طرف شورای حکام
It appears that the resolution adopted by the Board of Governors with a very narrow and fragile margin, as you know, it received 19 votes in favor and the combined number of votes against and abstentions was almost the same, can once again be described as a political move designed to serve the maximum pressure campaign pursued by the West and the Zionist regime against Iran.
Tehran went further, describing the resolution as an unconstructive attempt by the European Troika and the U.S. to compensate for their failed snapback attempt at the UN.
Senior political analyst Dr. Hossein Kanani Moqaddam offered further insight into the resolution.
The core content of this resolution is to impose a three-month deadline, after which the case would be referred to the UN Security Council, enabling the Council to pass a resolution against Iran and take action. If we think of this resolution as a nuclear reactor, the core of that reactor, in terms of impact, is that it confirms the snapback mechanism, reinstates the six previous resolutions, and once again alleges Iran's lack of cooperation. It does not call for the suspension of Iran's nuclear activities, but for their complete shutdown. It also reinforces the requirement for Iran to return to the safeguards agreement it accepted and signed in 2003, an agreement that is binding and legally enforceable because it clearly outlines Iran's obligations. This resolution effectively revives Iran's file, which was close to being removed from the Board of Governors' agenda. It states that in every upcoming board session, Iran's nuclear case must remain one of the items on the agenda.
The irony, Iran notes, is that the IAEA itself has acknowledged the very real consequences of the June attacks. Normal safeguards were disrupted, inspectors were withdrawn, and Iran, saying it acted in good faith, still allowed verification activities to resume at facilities unaffected by the attacks. Grossi's own report recognized Iran's domestic legal requirements and affirmed the agency's commitment to respecting Iranian security concerns. Yet the sponsors of the resolution barely mentioned any of this. During special board sessions, they avoided reference to the attacks entirely, even though the IAEA's official report documents them. The EU, speaking for its 27 members, stressed that diplomacy is the only viable path forward. With six UN resolutions reinstated, the EU said all members are now obligated to require Iran to suspend all enrichment, reprocessing, and heavy water activities. The Union insisted Iran had sidestepped its JCPOA commitments for 6 years and that its enriched uranium stockpile has ballooned to nearly 50 times the JCPOA limit. Mr. Hassan Beheshtipour, a senior political analyst, placed the recent resolution against Iran in context.
These resolutions are essentially a continuation of the nuclear case-building process against Iran. Since August 2002, Iran's peaceful nuclear activities were turned into an international issue, and from that point onward, it has been called Iran's nuclear file, while in reality it's a manufactured file. This case was created for Iran, and one of the main platforms where this case building happens is the IAEA and its Board of Governors. The importance of this resolution is not simply that another resolution has been issued and Iran will not implement it, so it does not matter. It does matter because they are creating documentation against us. When a country is discussed and voted on in a 35-member body, and an 8-paragraph text is issued as a ruling, that text becomes another sheet added to the previous ones. Iran's file at the Board of Governors includes over 120 Director General reports issued every 3 months and more than 40 resolutions. The resolution adopted in this recent round is effectively the 10th in the latest phase. From an international standpoint, the problem is that each new resolution becomes another documented claim layered onto the previous ones, strengthening their narrative. The other key issue is that this gives Germany, the UK, France, and behind the scenes the US and Israel a pretext. They can now cite these resolutions as justification for taking new actions or imposing additional measures against Iran.
According to EU claims, Iran holds more than 440 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium and over 10 significant quantities of highly enriched material. Some of this, they allege, has been unaccounted for over 5 months. With those accusations on the table, the Troika defended their decision to activate snapback, reviving 6 old UN Security Council resolutions and using them as a legal basis for the new joint resolution with Washington. What is the significance of the recent anti-Iranian resolution adopted by the IAEA, and what would be the possible repercussions?
در واقع نتیجه این قدم همون سندسازی که عرض کردم و
One of the outcomes of this resolution is exactly the document building process I mentioned earlier. They are trying to create legitimacy for actions that are in fact illegitimate. When a nuclear site is operating under IAEA supervision, like Fordow, Natanz, or Isfahan, the agency issues detailed reports on them every 3 months. These facilities are inspected, transparent, internationally recognized, and engage in peaceful activity. So when such sites are attacked, that attack is an illegal act under international law because it targets facilities under IAEA oversight that are in full compliance with the NPT. Yet they attempt to justify this unlawful behavior through the very resolutions issued against Iran. Even before the Zionist regime's attack on Iran, a resolution had already been passed, and these resolutions are then used as political cover. In other words, they are manufacturing legitimacy. Under international law, as long as a site is under IAEA supervision and complying with the NPT, no state has the right to attack it. But through these resolutions, they try to turn the situation into a political asset, using it to increase pressure on Iran, push for further isolation, discourage other countries from engaging with Iran, and build negative media narratives. They create a wide range of storylines around these issues. Yet, when you look closely, there is not a single piece of evidence, according to the agency itself, that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons.
On safeguards, the Europeans argued Iran has delayed verification of enriched materials and failed to implement several NPT obligations. They also insisted that Tehran submit a special report on the damaged facilities, grant access to key sites, and resolve what they call unresolved issues. Unable to meet their own JCPOA commitments, the Europeans now accuse Iran of failing to restore trust and transparency, particularly regarding enriched uranium stockpiles. Dr. Kanani Mokaddam stated that the West's hidden agenda is to overthrow the Islamic Republic. What do you think is the real reason and motivation behind the European Troika's action? And basically, do you think there exists a hidden agenda contrary to what they state and express?
The overarching plan the West is pursuing regarding Iran is essentially a Libya-style model. The idea is to first dismantle Iran's nuclear capabilities and remove its equipment, then intensify pressure on Iran's missile program and regional policies. After that, NATO and the UK would be in a position to carry out military action with ease. And as we saw in Libya, the result of such a model is a country that becomes fragmented, loses its sovereign authority, faces a power vacuum, and is stripped of its capabilities, gaining nothing in return.
Have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. First, Iran condemns draft resolution by US, E3 at IAEA BOG. Iran's permanent representative to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Reza Najafi, censured a draft resolution proposed by the United States and 3 European countries at the IAEA Board of Governors, calling it a bid to impose unjustified and illegal reporting obligations on the United Nations Atomic Agency's Director General Rafael Grossi. The anti-Iranian resolution at the IAEA Board of Governors will not change Iran's status of safeguards implementation, Najafi said ahead of the upcoming BOG meeting, which took place from November 19 to 21 in Vienna. He argued that Washington and the E3 are once again trying to manipulate international mechanisms in order to impose their unreasonable and coercive positions on the Iranian nation. Forcing Grossi to base reports on expired UN Security Council resolutions is not only completely unlawful and unjustified, but will also, in practice, increase existing complexities and deal another setback to diplomacy, the Iranian diplomat added. Iran warns of countermeasures against illegal IAEA resolution. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said Tehran is considering more countermeasures against an illegal resolution adopted by the International Atomic Energy Agency regarding the country's peaceful nuclear program. Ismail Baghaei made the remarks on November 21, one day after the IAEA's 35-member Board of Governors passed the anti-Iran resolution put forward by France, the UK, Germany, and the United States. In response, Tehran announced the termination of the deal it signed in Egypt's Cairo in September to resume cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog. The ties had been suspended after the deadly U.S.-Israeli aggression against Iran in June. Baghaei said in an official letter to the agency, "We declared that the so-called Cairo agreement, which had been reached with Iran's goodwill and after relatively long negotiations with the agency, is now cancelled. Other measures are also under consideration." Tehran Times. MPs ponder response to IAEA's anti-Iran resolution. The National Security and Foreign Policy Committee of the Iranian Parliament categorically condemned the recently adopted anti-Iran resolution by the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency after beginning the process to devise an appropriate response. Ebrahim Rezaei, the spokesperson for the committee, dismissed the resolution as politically motivated and illegal, highlighting the need to show a strong and deterrent reaction to the move. He made the comments following an extraordinary session of the committee attended by Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister and the Deputy Head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Rezaei had previously suggested that Tehran leave the NPT. This session was held in order to review the IAEA's recent resolution against the Islamic Republic of Iran, he explained. IRNA. Russia anti-Iran resolution by IAEA BOG is a serious blow to credibility of agency. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova said that Russia considers the anti-Iranian and provocative resolution of the International Atomic Energy Agency proposed by the Western camp a serious blow to international confidence in the IAEA safeguards and the nuclear NPT. Reacting to the vote of the IAEA Board of Governors on the draft resolution on the NPT safeguards agreement with the Islamic Republic of Iran, Zakharova said that there is no need for emergency action by the IAEA Board of Governors regarding the verification activities in Iran. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson pointed out that the IAEA Secretariat had not requested any instructions from the IAEA Board of Governors. She said that Russia recognizes Iran's continued adherence to its obligations under the NPT and the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency, despite the U.S. and Israeli attacks on its nuclear facilities under IAEA safeguards in June. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative. For many years, Iran's peaceful nuclear program has been the target of political pressure and Western allegations. Before the JCPOA, the possible military dimensions file became the centerpiece of sanctions and threats. But when that file was formally closed in 2015, the pretext disappeared, albeit for a while. After the JCPOA was signed, Iran complied. The United States did not, walking away in 2018. Europe, meanwhile, never delivered the economic benefits it had promised. In response, Iran exercised its JCPOA-defined rights and scaled back commitments. 7 years of diplomacy followed. Iran says it approached negotiations in good faith,
Western governments, however, responded with delays and ever-increasing demands.
When the Zionist regime carried out its illegal attack against Iran and its nuclear facilities, European countries not only refused to condemn it, they even expressed satisfaction. They particularly welcomed any adverse event that might occur in Iran, whether targeting nuclear sites or even affecting Iranian civilians. This clearly shows that the concerns the West claims to have about Iran are not technical at all. They are entirely political. There are numerous precedents for this. Consider the nuclear agreement. When the United States withdrew from the JCPOA, Europe, despite its explicit commitments under the deal, did not activate the snapback mechanism against the US, nor did it uphold its promised cooperation with Iran. In one of the joint meetings about a year after the US withdrawal in 2019, the Europeans made a series of commitments during the session with the JCPOA Joint Commission, yet they failed to fulfill any of them. They even pretended to introduce certain initiatives to preserve the agreement and deliver the economic benefits Iran was supposed to receive, but none of these materialized. In practice, Europe's conduct after the JCPOA and following the US withdrawal demonstrated that they were playing a complementary role to the United States. Europeans maintained a diplomatic facade of commitment, but in reality they sought to ensure that only Iran remained bound to the agreement, while Iran received none of the benefits it was promised.
On November 20th, Iran's foreign ministry condemned the new resolution as illegal and unjustifiable, imposed under pressure from Washington, London, Paris, and Berlin. Hours later, Iran's foreign minister announced that the Cairo agreement between Iran and the IAEA can no longer be implemented. Tehran notes that 5 months earlier, a biased IAEA report helped clear the way for the June attacks carried out by Israel and the United States. Even then, Iran continued cooperating. Back in September, Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi made a new inspection agreement in Cairo, only for the European Troika and the U.S. to revive snapback once again. Supported by Russia and China, Iran rejected the process as legally invalid. From Iran's perspective, the West's decision to activate the snapback killed the Cairo agreement outright. Now, Tehran says that the U.S. must answer one basic question. If U.S. President Donald Trump claims that he destroyed Iran's nuclear facilities, then what exactly does the West want to inspect? The new resolution seeks to revive demands from long-expired U.N. resolutions requiring Iran to suspend enrichment. According to Iran, the board has no legal authority to resurrect terminated Security Council measures. The Troika's attempt to imply such authority exposes bad faith and disregard for IAEA procedures. To Tehran, the text reads like a manifesto of threats aimed at restricting Iran's strategic capabilities, a project championed for decades by the U.S., Europe, and Israel.
Iran has several possible courses of action. The first is a snapback against snapback approach, meaning we raise the cost of such measures to a level that Europeans reconsider exerting pressure on the Islamic Republic. Part of this relates to energy, and part of it concerns international waterways such as Bab al-Mandeb, the Persian Gulf, and the Indian Ocean. Iran has the ability to raise Europe's energy costs to a point where some governments, already facing economic crises, may regret entering a game designed for them by the Americans. In parts of Europe, there are still rational actors who do not wish to follow U.S. policy line by line. The second path is through diplomacy. We must continue dialogue and emphasize our right to the peaceful use of nuclear energy, a right recognized under international law and accepted by all. We're still within the framework of the MPT. We have not withdrawn, and we should maintain this course to reach a balance between pressures and resistance. The third option is reaching a point of no return, moving the nuclear program to the edge of breakout, enriching up to 90%, conducting a nuclear test, withdrawing from the MPT, and disrupting the regional order the United States seeks to impose. But entering such a path could lead to a conflict whose scope is unknown, including whether it could escalate into a global war.
Yet, Iran emphasizes a key point. Not one IAEA inspection report has ever accused Iran of blocking inspectors. Not one. Before the attacks, Iran had the highest inspection rate in the world. Nearly three-quarters of IAEA verification activities in all safeguard agreement states occurred in Iran. In 2024, the IAEA conducted 1,381 inspector days there. Among 32 countries operating without the additional protocol, Iran, with only 3% of global enrichment capacity, accounted for more than 70% of all inspections. But while Iran's transparency has been unmatched, Israel, armed with an undeclared nuclear arsenal estimated up to 400 warheads and never a member of the NPT, operates outside any inspections. UN Resolution 487 demanded that Israel place its facilities under safeguards. It never has. The result, from Iran's perspective, the IAEA is no longer acting as a neutral arbiter. What was meant to be an impartial watchdog now appears to function as a vehicle for Western political pressure.
به طور خلاصه‌اش اینه که اولا اسرائیل NPT رو نپذیرفته.
In short, Israel has not accepted the NPT, whereas Iran has. Israel is a member of the IAEA, but it has never signed the agency's most fundamental treaty, and because it has not signed it, it does not consider itself bound by it. So why is there no pressure on Israel? Because it's an ally of the United States, Germany, the UK, France, and other dominant powers. In today's world, international law is not what truly governs. Power does. It is power that shapes international relations. That's why Israel, backed by the US, the UK, France, Germany, and others, can simply refuse to join the NPT, remain a member of the IAEA, and at the same time possess more than 300 nuclear warheads. Why cannot Iran do the same? First, because they would never accept it. Iran has fundamentally challenged international order and the existing balance of power. Iran views this system as hegemonic and domineering and is in confrontation with it on various fronts, including the nuclear issue. So it's clear that they will seize on any pretext, including the nuclear file, to prevent Iran from operating outside the NPT framework, even if those activities are purely peaceful. For them, this is a convenient instrument to maintain pressure on a country that has dared to challenge the existing international system.
After 22 years of allegations and political maneuvering, the IAEA Board of Governors' latest resolution confirms that the agency is no longer an independent supervisor. It is an operational arm of Western policy, applying pressure, issuing threats, and advancing a strategy of containment. Tehran views the resolution as the final, unmistakable sign of a system no longer aligned with fairness, impartiality, or the principles of the non-proliferation regime. We asked Dr. Abedi to outline the possible scenarios that lie ahead. What do you think would be Iran's next move?
It seems the United States and Europe are once again trying to pull Iran back to the negotiating table, but for an unfair agreement, one based on their imposed conditions. One of the key conditions they insisted on in the past and continue to insist on today, despite its illegality, is stripping Iran of its right to uranium enrichment. This, in fact, is the most optimistic scenario. I personally believe there is also a more pessimistic scenario, that the West is not actually seeking oversight of Iran's nuclear program. Rather, they want additional intelligence about the facilities that were attacked and about enriched materials buried beneath them, so they can complete the sabotage of operations previously carried out against Iran's nuclear program. Even in the optimistic scenario, their aim is to shut down Iran's nuclear program and reduce it to whatever level they consider acceptable. There is also a third scenario, neither a new agreement nor a military strike, but instead an escalation of maximum pressure on Iran. To intensify this pressure, they seek a legal mechanism. The Board of Governors resolution is essentially an attempt to give legal cover to the unjust pressure they want to impose. Iran is familiar with all these scenarios and has prepared itself accordingly. Over the past two decades, and even after the Zionist regime's recent attack, Iran's primary effort has consistently been to follow a legal and legitimate path, cooperate with international institutions, and rebuild international confidence in its nuclear program, not merely the confidence of Western governments. In my view, the most likely scenario is that Iran will once again pursue a legal process to disrupt and counter this Western strategy against it.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, it's now time for a short lecture
با شیخ مهدی راستانی.
We reached verse 18 of Surah Al-Hashr. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, ittaqullah, O you who believe, fear Allah, wal tandur nafsun ma qaddamat lighadin. And every soul should think about what he has sent forward for himself. Wattaqullah. And the verse again says, fear Allah. Inna Allaha khabirun bima ta'malun. For Allah knows very well what it is that you do. And we said that this verse talks about this idea, this exercise that you and I have to go through, where we think about what we've sent forward for ourselves. What is it? If I were to leave right now, what are some of those deeds that I could use and ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, say, Ya Allah, I did this, and I did this. And how many of those deeds that I did, how many of them can I pinpoint and say, this one I did with the right intention. This one I didn't do because I wanted other people to see it. And this one I didn't do because I wanted other people to praise me. I did it only for you. How many? If you and I wanted to make a list of this, how long would this list even become? This is a question we have to ask ourselves. This is a question that the human being has to constantly go through this exercise. That is not to say that if you do something in the presence of others, or you tell someone else about what you have done, that this deed is definitely done without a sincere intention. No. Intention is far more nuanced than that. Just because you do something in the presence of others doesn't mean that this intention is the wrong intention necessarily. The Prophet did so many deeds, he did it in the presence of others. Our Imams did so many deeds, they did it in the presence of others. So it's nuance. But this is a question we have to ask ourselves. When I did it in the presence of others, did I do it for the right reasons or not? Okay. The next verse moves on, and the next verse is very beautiful and one that I want to take some time to really delve into. This is verse 19. He says, وَلَا تَكُونُوا, and don't be like these people. This is a common thread in the verses of the Qur'an, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commonly says, don't end up like these guys. وَلَا تَكُونُوا كَالَّذِينَ is a common phrase that comes up over and over again. Yes, sometimes you sit with your parents. What do your parents say? Say, listen, make sure you don't end up like this person. Make sure you don't end up like that person. This is what the Qur'an is saying. And don't be like these people, because these people, they have issues. These people, they have problems, so don't end up like this. Okay, so who are these people I'm not supposed to end up like? He says, وَلَا تَكُونُوا كَالَّذِينَ, don't be like those people. نَسُوا اللَّهَ فَأَنْسَاهُمْ أَنْفُسَهُمْ, don't be like those people who forgot God, and because of that, Allah made them forget themselves. Don't be like that person who forgets God, and the consequence of that is that Allah makes him forget who he is. And then the verse ends with this. أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَاسِقُونَ, those are the ones who openly sin. They give themselves a green light to commit sins. Yes? Fisq means a person who commits big sins. He commits it openly. He doesn't care. This is fasiq. So what is the verse saying here? The verse is saying, listen, if you are amongst fasiqoon, if you end up in that position where you sin and you do as you wish, guess what's going to happen? You are going to forget Allah. And because you are forgetting Allah, you will end up in a position where you will forget who you yourself are. You will lose your identity. You won't even know who you are in life. Many of us identify with different things in this world. I identify with my ethnicity, for example. Yeah? They ask you, who are you? You say, well, I'm Iranian. I'm Pakistani. I'm Indian. I don't know, Arab, whatever the case might be. Yes, I'm American, whatever the case might be. Or we identify, for example, with our careers. Or we identify, in this part of the world, I identify with which college they attended. Now, who cares what college you attended, but it's a thing. Yes? Oh, Texas A&M, I don't know, this, that. Okay, whatever the case might be, right? You identify with these colleges. And none of these are haram. All of them are completely fine. Yes? But at the end of the day, all of these identities seem to just go away in your relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And your relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you only identify with one thing. And that is exactly the same thing they will identify you and I when they're doing Salatul Mayyit with us. When that day comes, inshallah, after 120 years, after we've done a good job in this world, yes? Then they want to do Salatul Mayyit. They want to identify you. They want to say, oh Allah, we're bringing this servant to you. Yes, now he's going to move on to you. You're going to take care of him from now on. So how do they identify us when those moments come? Do they say, okay, well, this person, oh Allah, this is a Pakistani servant of yours. This is an Iranian servant of yours. This is the one who went to Texas A&M. This is the one who had the top career. This is the one who was top notch in their corporation. None of these are bad things, by the way. They're all wonderful things. But this is not how fundamentally you identify yourself. What do they say when they have mayyits? They want to now send him to Allah. He needs a pass. He needs a title. They want to identify him to these angels that are now taking him. What do they say? They say, Allahumma. They say, oh Allah, inna hada abduka wa ibnu abdik. Oh Allah, this is your servant, and he's a son of another one of your servants. What happened to all of those titles and all of those identifiers and all of those, he grew up here and his parents were this and he came from this family and all of, what happened to all of it? It all disappeared. They say, Allahumma inna hada abduka wabnu abdik wabnu amatik. He's a son of one of your male servants, a son of one of your female servants. This is who he is. Okay, so how do you differentiate between this person and all the other mayyits? The other mayyits are also son of fulan and son of fulan. Yes? So how do you differentiate between them? They continue. They say, in kana muhsinan, fazid fi ihsane. Oh Allah, if he did good in this world, then add to his good. Wa in kana musian, fatajawaz an. So the only differentiator, the only categorization that happens is what? Is he muhsin or is he musi? What about all those other things? All those other things are functions of this world, and there's no problem with regards to them. Yes? The Quran says, وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلَ لِتَعَارَفُ. We made you into these tribes so that you would be able to identify each other. If everyone came from the same country, imagine how confusing things would become. Then you wanted to identify someone, you only identify them with their fingerprints. It's the only thing that would be different at that point, right? If everyone's born in the same city, how are you going to be able to identify them? Now you say, oh, do you know Muhammad? Muhammad from where? Muhammad from Houston. Muhammad from Dallas. You say, oh yeah, I know that Muhammad. From Seattle, you say, I know that Muhammad. You identify, there's no problem with regards to these things. But none of these things count when the time comes. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying, this is how you have to identify. But the one who ends up sinning, he loses this identifier for himself in this world. And because he loses this identifier, he is always lost in life. He doesn't know who he is. He starts to identify with other things. He starts to identify with the car. He starts to identify with the money. He starts to identify with the fame and the likes and the clicks. He starts to identify with different things that the world has to offer to him. And trust me, this world has a lot of things to offer to us. It's a lot of things. At one age, it's one thing. You get a little bit older, it becomes a different thing. Dunya has a lot of things to offer to us. He starts to identify with those things. But here's the problem. Because he identifies with those things now, and he assumes that those things are part of who he is, when they ask him to leave this dunya now, when they ask him to go, when they ask him to leave behind this stuff, it feels like a part of him is being left behind. It feels like he's being torn apart. Why? Because this is who he is. He is the one who owns the car. He is the one who owns the business. He is the one who owns the real estate. He is the one who is the spotlight of attention, of fame, whatever the case might be. Now this angel of death is coming and telling him, give that up, now we have to go. He feels like they're tearing him apart. They feel like a part of his heart is left behind. Because this wealth was who he was. This fame was who he was. This is the way he used to look at things. This is how he used to identify with things. And this is why it becomes very difficult for a disbeliever to leave this world. Why? Because this world was who he was. This was his whole identity. Now you're pulling him away, now it's difficult for him to give up his soul. And God forbid we end up like this. The stronger his faith becomes, the less he identifies with this world. The less he identifies with this world, the easier this process becomes.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mati.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Quran Quest, a program on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of program Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We have been starting a series of discussions, including questions and answers in this program, Quran Quest, on IRIB English Radio, regarding the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Mu'minun, or chapter The Faithful, or Believers. Well, we went from, the first few verses of this chapter, talking about, or actually God explains and describes some of the qualities of the believers, or the most important ones, as the pillars, so that we can, make judgment and assess whether somebody can be counted in the camp of the believers or the faithful or not. And then it moves on to the story of the creation, right? And we have reached the 16th verse so far. But to give you a bit of a context, or set the stage for verses to come after 16, we need to also focus a little bit on the verse number 15. Let's take a listen to a few verses of this chapter, Surah Al-Mu'minun, or chapter The Faithful, and we come back after a short break. Stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.